Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
It's 7:41 now, and Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe put a whole lot of time and a whole lot of money into trying to swing control of the state Senate to Democrats. He had been hoping to get some support for his legislative agenda and some momentum, too, into going into next year's election. Joining us live, Kyle Kondik, who is the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Kyle, thanks for being here this morning. Tell us what role that you think the battle over the I-66 tolls had on this race.
You know, I think it's hard to say it had much effect. The Democrats won Senate District 29, which is the most competitive Senate district in Northern Virginia. They also picked up a couple of House of Delegates seats. Unfortunately for the Democrats, they lost the other most competitive seat, which was a Richmond-based Republican-held seat, and so the Senate remains 21-19 Republican. But, you know, if the toll issue had really made an impact, you might have seen Democrats lose Senate District 29 in Northern Virginia, or maybe you would have seen upsets of Democrats in some other races in Northern Virginia. And that didn't happen. And so I think that if there was any real effect from the toll issue, I think it was minor.
So let's take a look at that toll issue moving forward then, because the governor thinks it's a plan that could help reduce the perpetual congestion on 66. Would he get support from the Republicans, say, in the Senate now who maintain their majority?
Well, certainly Republicans in the Senate, and also I think a lot of Democrats in Northern Virginia don't have a lot of interest in the plan, although I think it's important to realize that basically it would, as a person who's not in a carpool, you're not allowed to drive on 66 inside the Beltway. And so this would just sort of, allow people to do that, but didn't have to pay a toll for it. But of course, it seems like a lot of people, break that law anyway and get by unscathed. I don't know if the Republicans in the General Assembly are ever really interested in raising taxes or implementing tolls or that sort of thing.
Listeners, welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. You've been listening to a recap of the Virginia elections last night. I am, as usual, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. And actually, I guess you should now say that I am delegate-elect Mark Levine. Last night, I won my election to represent the 45th District of Virginia in the House of Delegates. Now, the House of Delegates is just a fancy name for state representative. It is, in fact, the oldest. The House of Delegates used to be called the House of Burgesses, and it is the oldest continuously elected body in the Western Hemisphere. It dates back to 1619, so we'll be celebrating our 400th anniversary in just a few years. I hope to be there when it happens. If I sound hoarse, if I sound tired, well, hey, it's the day after Election Day. And you may have noticed, in fact, that I wasn't on the air yesterday, and that's because I was busy going from precinct to precinct, every single precinct in my district I visited. Now, it may surprise you. Oh, and the other thing I should let you know is the margin of victory. So my opponent, the people who voted against me, got about 800-some-odd votes, and I got about 16,000 votes. So I won 95%. Well, truth be told, I didn't have an opponent. The only people who could oppose me were people who wrote in someone else's names. I don't know who they wrote in. Maybe it was Donald Trump, for that matter. The big election in Alexandria, Arlington, Fairfax County, the portion of Northern Virginia that I will represent in the state capital of Richmond, is a very liberal district. They sometimes call it Blue Virginia. It is this part of Virginia that, well, many would say is not part of the South anymore, just as South Florida is not part of the South, even though it's very far south. Northern Virginia is not part of the South, because culturally, Northern Virginia is very different from the rest of Virginia, just as Southern Florida is very different from Northern Florida. When people think of the South, they think of Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, my home state of Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Arkansas, Louisiana. They think of that swath of states that fought against the Union in the Civil War, the ones, of course, that held slaves, the ones that speak with a Southern accent and tend to be very conservative. Well, certainly most of Virginia is like that. But Northern Virginia, the region that I will represent, or a portion of which I will represent, is very culturally different. We are very diverse. We are a suburb of Washington, D.C. I myself came to Northern Virginia because I was a chief counsel to Congressman Barney Frank, needed a place to stay, fell in love with Alexandria, and I've been there for 15 years. That's pretty typical of most of us in Northern Virginia, just like most of those in suburban Maryland. They come because of the nation's capital. They tend to be liberal and educated. In fact, I would dare say Northern Virginia, D.C., and suburban Maryland has the highest percentage of lawyers per capita, no doubt, than anywhere else in the United States, probably the world. I'm proud to say the district that I was just elected to represent is probably, and I don't have statistics on this, but I have strong anecdotal reason to believe it's true. I would say the 45th District of Virginia is the most educated district in the Commonwealth of Virginia. That the people in my district I know are way more politically aware than any other, and they vote more often than any other. I'm very, very proud of my constituents. I'm very proud to represent my constituents. I'm very honored to represent constituents that are, by one sense, difficult. They're difficult in the sense that they know politics. They know policy. When I ran in the primary election in June, and unlike my general election, which wasn't contested, my primary election was hotly contested. There were five progressive Democrats all running for one seat. After our outgoing delegate, Democratic delegate had resigned, just because we don't have any competitiveness with Republicans doesn't mean that we Democrats aren't competitive with each other. That was a very, very competitive race. And I went door to door, retail politicking, and knocking on doors. And I remember a man, I'd say in his late 60s, really peppered me about transportation. I know different people talk about different things. Sometimes it's education, sometimes it's civil rights, sometimes it's criminal justice reform, sometimes it's housing and minimum wage. There's all kinds of issues, Medicaid expansion. This guy wanted to talk about transportation. He asked me all these questions about Virginia transportation. And after we talked at length about Virginia transportation, after we talked about 10, 15, 20 minutes, I don't know how long, he said to me that I'd done a pretty good job. I said, thank you. I said, what do you do? He said, I run the Department of Transportation. He, of course, ran the National Department, the U.S. Department of Transportation in Washington, or he was an assistant DA, chair, secretary, whatever he was. He was very high up in the leadership of the nation's transportation system, and he was testing me. And thus, my constituents, the people I will represent in the state capital of Richmond, are clearly very educated, very knowledgeable, and oftentimes they know the issue better than I do. I have to say it's a joy for me personally to represent a district like that. For one thing, they're always going to keep me on my toes. That's for sure, because they're very intelligent and they know what they're talking about. But also it means that I get to learn a lot of things. It also means that I'm less likely to have to face and fight the fear and ignorance that Democrats have to fight all throughout the state, all throughout the United States. You heard the segment before I started talking. They were talking about toll roads. Now, this is a very local issue. It has to do with an interstate, I-66, and the question of whether or not to use tolls for some drivers on the highway that currently are not allowed to use the highway. Currently, the highway during rush hour can only be used by two or more people. The point is not the specifics of the issue, but that this was a case where Republicans just flat out lied. They flat out put out ads that were false. That were false about the details of the tolls, that were false about the Democratic candidates who frankly opposed the tolls even though they weren't explained right. And it was our job to fight this misinformation. That's what that little segment at the beginning was about. And I've been thinking since my victory last night just about misinformation, about campaigning, about what it feels like to be a delegate-elect. Now, I've been a delegate-elect now for less than 24 hours. It's still brand new to me. And I thought it might be interesting just to chat about what it feels like. When I won the primary in June, and I knew, I told voters, and I was telling them the truth, that the election in June was tantamount to the election in November. That the primary election was the general election. There were no Republicans running. Whoever they voted for was going to be their delegate, their state representative. And that confused a lot of people. A lot of people said, I don't vote in primaries. And I said to them, if you don't vote in primaries, then you don't vote. Right? Because you could vote in my 95% or you could write in someone that had no chance. But really, the election that occurred yesterday wasn't much of an election at all for me. Now, there were other contested races on the ballot. In fact, I spent most of my time and money, a huge amount of time and money, helping other candidates, other Democratic candidates succeed. I think that's what you do when you're in a safe district. You help more Democrats outside of safe districts. But I was thinking psychologically about the difference between my win in June and my win last night. My win in June was euphoric. It was exciting. I thought I had a great chance of winning, but I didn't know. Until the votes come in, you never really can know. We hadn't done any polls. It was predicted I would get fourth out of fifth, but I knew we'd won a really good campaign. I knew that I had knocked on more doors than anybody else. I knew that I had a great reaction from people I talked to after the debates. I talked to at their doors when I knocked on them, at farmers markets, at churches and synagogues. I would talk to people online. It felt good. I felt like I had a good chance, but I didn't know. So when those results start coming in and you win some precincts and you lose some precincts and you're counting the votes and you're ahead and you're worried that your lead is declining, that's euphoric. That's exciting. That's, if you're a competitive person, that's like playing a sporting event or watching a sporting event. Or, you know, I play poker and bridge and playing cards. I like to win. I admit it. I'm a competitive person. That's euphoric. And then when I won in June, it was stunning. It was astonishing. It was something I'd worked so hard for, but I was so tired. I'd worked so hard that it almost seems like I was in a dream state. Election night, June 9th. Last night was a little different. If the first night was euphoria, excited happiness, last night was a very tranquil happiness, a content happiness. Still tired, because I believe I'm pulling out all stops, even when no one's running against me. So I'm still tired, but now I'm more contemplative, thinking about the future, thinking about what I'm going to do in Richmond, surrounded by Republicans. And I thought I'd just come on the air. Didn't really have time to prepare, but I know a lot about what happened last night and a lot about what it's like now to run for office. 2 years ago, I had no idea what it was like to run for office. And I just want to have a very real chat with you folks about what it's like and, frankly, answer any questions you have about the process. Toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Delegate-elect Mark Levine. I'm still trying on the title. I get to be Delegate Mark Levine in January of next year when I'm sworn in Richmond, the capital of the state of Virginia, to be one of 100 members of the Virginia House of Delegates, the oldest continuously elected body in the Western Hemisphere. I'll be working in the state capitol that Thomas Jefferson helped design, and I'll be surrounded by a vast majority of conservative Republicans. It's going to be an interesting experience. That's the House of Delegates. Virginia, like 49 of the 50 states, is bicameral, meaning that it has both a Senate and a House. In the Senate, unfortunately for us in Virginia, we were behind by just one seat, 21-19. We needed one more seat, 2020, with a Democratic lieutenant governor to break the tie, to control the Senate. Unfortunately, we failed. There is a race that we might dispute, but probably we're going to stay just where we are now, one vote behind. That was frustrating. But a number of people have asked me what it's going to be like to serve in a body, an elected body, where I'm so much in the minority. And I was thinking to myself, I've never been in the majority. When I worked for Congressman Barney Frank, George Bush was president. Both houses were Republican, House of Representatives and the Senate. George Bush was president even though the American people didn't vote for him. The American people chose Al Gore. Al Gore won the popular vote, and if the votes had been counted in Florida, he won the electoral vote as well. Of course, we all know the Supreme Court ordered that the votes of Florida citizens not be counted because, as Justice Scalia put it, counting the votes would damage the legitimacy of George Bush's claim to be president. In other words, if you count the votes, Bush will lose. So don't count the votes. We say Bush wins. In any case, despite the wishes of the American people to have a Democrat run the country, I was in the minority. We were in the minority. Barney Frank was in the minority. All Democrats were. And yet we accomplished some things. And I've been thinking about what I intend to do in Richmond. Obviously, I have strong progressive values. If you've listened to me well nigh these 12 years, I've been on the radio more than 12 years now, you know my values. What is a progressive to do when confronted by a majority of not just Republicans, but conservative Republicans? When do you stand your ground and when do you compromise? What is the purpose of a legislature? Is it to find something that you can come to common ground on? Or should you stand your ground and fight for something better? Hillary Clinton used that wonderful phrase of she knows when to find common ground, she knows when to stand her ground. And I want to talk about, well, when to do each when we come back. Toll-free number 888-488-MARK. Be right back right after this.
Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. If I sound hoarse and tired, I am. I admit it. I went to every single precinct yesterday in my district, which spans mostly, it's about 80%, the eastern half of Alexandria, if you know Northern Virginia, and about 15% in Arlington, and then a little bit, maybe 5% in Fairfax County. And I went to each and every precinct, greeted precinct workers, greeted voters, talked to people there. One might ask, well, why did I do it? I mean, the election was uncontested. No one was opposing me. The only, if you didn't want to vote for me, you had to vote for somebody that you wrote in. But maybe you could just click write-in and leave it blank. I don't know. They don't even tell you who the write-in candidates are unless you lose. So it's hard to tell. Why did I run so hard? I could have slept all day yesterday. Instead, I got up at 5 in the morning, was out 21 precincts, and by the time I went to bed last night and watched the returns, it was, oh, I don't know, 3 a.m. I'd gone to bed at 2 a.m. the night before. What made me run so hard? What's the point? I thought about that because I'm really tired right now and I've been busy all day. Just this morning I got up and I went to a preschool in Arlington to learn why they're doing such a good job. Then I went to a Arlington celebration lunch. I'm going to a dinner tonight. Hopefully I don't fall on my face. Why work so hard when you don't have to? Part of it is the honest realization that if you work hard when you're unopposed, you'll never be opposed. If people understand that you are going to work very hard for every single vote, they're less likely to run against you. That's sort of a crass reasoning. But the more real truth, in my view, is that I like to talk to voters. I like to get out there, see who's voting for me. I want to know who I represent. I want to meet my bosses. The people of my district in Northern Virginia, of Alexandria, Virginia, a little bit of Arlington and Fairfax, people of the 45th District, they're my people. They're my bosses. They tell me what to do. I work for them. I need to know who they are. I want to see what they look like. I want to see what they act like. I want to see, most of all, what they care about. And so, as I went and voters went to the polls, some talked with me at length. Some barely talked to me at all. Some wanted to get in and out and vote. Others wanted to regale me at length about their detailed views on any number of issues. I hope this never gets old for me. I hope that I will always enjoy talking to voters. You know, I do enjoy talking. I host a talk radio show. Even if I'm hoarse, it's something that I enjoy doing. And I like hearing from you, and I do encourage everyone. You certainly don't have to be from Virginia. I know we only have a station or so in Virginia. Most of you are from out of Virginia. If you want to call in, please do. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I do like chatting with you. But I was thinking about, will I always like this? You know, why do I do it? And I think the answer is that, to me, there are so many easy fixes in government. I don't mean easy in the sense of easy to politically pass something. That's very hard to do, particularly when you're in the minority, particularly when Republicans control both the House and the Senate in Virginia. But easy in the sense of there are a lot of people that have issues in the state, like in any state, with things that just make no sense. Ways that laws are structured that just turn out to harm people that they're not meant to harm. And I remember thinking, when I hear these stories, and I used to be a lawyer, I could file some lawsuit, but the best way to change the law is to change the law. A lawsuit, you have to work within existing laws. You might prove something unconstitutional. You might get a little leeway from a judge. But if you write a new law, you can change a lot of people's lives. And that's really exciting to me. That's really exciting that someone could come to me, have an issue, something going wrong, and that I could make their lives better. And I certainly don't expect to succeed all the time. I got a letter from a constituent just the other day who was stopped by police who voluntarily turned over a gram of marijuana. I don't have to tell you, by the way, that police often lie and encourage people to incriminate themselves, which is what apparently happened in this case. But then after that, went through the legal system for a while for a gram of possession of a substance that, frankly, I would legalize. I realize not everyone agrees with me. They might in Colorado and Washington that we lost a recent legalization measure in Ohio, one that occurred on Election Day. But the point is, this is someone who could write me and I could tell him what my views were and work to change it in the state capitol. Part of it, I guess, is that I don't want to feel helpless in the face of unjust laws. I want to change them. I want to make them better. When I play bridge or poker or any game, I am very careful to know the rules, to play by the rules, but to learn the rules in and out so that I can win. To me, helping others in the legislature is pretty much the same thing. There are rules. There are things you can do. There are things you can't do. And you want to play to win. But here's the best part. You win a game, you get fleeting joy. You make someone's lives better. And you have changed the world. You have become immortal. By making the world underneath your feet a better place, you've actually made a difference that can and will long last, often long after your own death. And after all, not to get too religious on you, isn't that what it's all about? Dave in Humboldt County on line one, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Mark, congratulations, old friend. That's happy for you.
Thank you.
You're asking the question, what now can you hope to do? What can you hope to accomplish, particularly in an environment where you're outnumbered, outgunned by the conservative right folks? And, you know, the thought that occurs to me, even though I think you're going to be tackling windmills, the insurmountable enemy there, that to as much as possible insist upon honest elections, a voting that is verifiable, countable, and can be recounted if need be, because I still, as you know, believe that once this country went to electronic voting, it ended democracy. Not completely. You,
Dave,
got in.
I think that you and I had this conversation in 2003 when I first started talk radio. I dare say, Dave, you may be my longest continuous caller. After 12 years, you should get a special award for that. If you're ever in the D.C. area, by all means, look me up. But you brought this up then. I told you then that I was committed to paper ballots. And I'm proud to say that at least in my corner of Virginia, and I can't speak for the rest of the country, I don't represent the rest of the country, but at least in my corner of Virginia, I was elected by a paper ballot. It's a ballot that you fill in your ovals. It's counted by a machine. However, you can physically count the votes, see the votes afterwards. You can check the veracity of the machine, which was, after all, the point of paper ballots. And there's no question. You don't get into hanging chads and all the craziness around the 2000 election. So I will look at getting that across the state of Virginia. Make sure it's not just in my area, but in the entire Commonwealth of Virginia. And really to protect people's rights to vote any way I can, because how are you going to know what your constituents want if they don't get a choice? And voting is the way that we make choices in democracy.
Yeah, so, I think every
you're right.
chance you get, at least whenever you're on that soapbox, whenever you have the willy pulpit to say what this country needs more than anything is to be confident and assured that when we go into a ballot precinct and vote, that vote is going to be counted as we count it, as we vote.
As we cast it.
I don't think there's that many people even anywhere. Virginia that has so voting, like you just had a 51% Republican Senate, and I am very suspicious of that one.
Well, I'll tell you, we are checking one race down in the Richmond area. I honestly don't know whether that race was done by a paper ballot or not. I'm going to find out. We are checking one race that does seem a bit suspicious. If we get one more Democratic senator, we'll have split 2020, and our lieutenant governor is a Democrat, so we'll actually control the Senate. So it's a very important race. The guy down there lost by maybe 1%. And in fact, some people think it's because we brought up guns that that he lost, because it's down in a relatively rural part around Richmond, which would really sadden me, because the things that I've been looking to do around guns are things like make sure that toddlers aren't able to handle them, make sure that they're kept safe, make sure that people who use them have had training, make sure that people who get them have undergone background checks. They're very reasonable things. They're not taking away people's guns unless, well, you happen to be a mass murderer, in which case, yeah, I'm going to take away your gun. But the point is that guns, I think guns is something like abortion or religion, or it's something that people have are not very rational about. They hold to them as if it were a religion, as if it were based on faith. And it's a shame because the gun lobby appeals to emotions, not facts, and often wins elections that way.
I guess that does happen, but I know, Mark, over the years you've spoken of, and to Bev Harris and others who are very much aware that, you know, they spoke of little precincts with a couple hundred registered voters that delivered 5,000-7,000 votes to Bush a few years back. And they say, that can't happen. We demand a recount. Well, what was to be recounted? That little 250-vote precinct had delivered 6,000-some-hundred votes to Bush. So if that kind of thing can happen, and she points it out, I hope you'll invite her on again. I'd love to hear her again speaking of.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you got to prove it, but I also think that the more that you have paper ballots all across the country, the more we can prevent any kind of election fraud. And that's certainly something that I want to do. Dave, thanks for calling. Always appreciate when you do, particularly your long service to the Inside Scoop. I'll tell you this, folks. When session starts in January 2016, I'm going to go off the air for a couple months. Going to go dark because I got to spend my 100% of my time back in Richmond. But I'll be back afterwards and let you know what happened. Fill you in, give you the inside scoop. This is Mark Levine. Still a chance to call in and chat with me. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar, and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Delegate-elect Mark Levine, talking about my big victory yesterday and I guess in solemn contemplation of what I've got ahead of me. Got to get some advice from you, my listeners, and I've got at least three of you on the line. Fantastic. Helen in Ithaca, line one, what are your thoughts?
Oh, hi.
Hello?
Yeah, I just heard you say you're going to be like off the air for a couple months.
Yeah, next year while I'm serving in Richmond.
Pardon?
Yeah, while I'm serving in Richmond, the Virginia legislature is just there for 2 months, and then I'll come back afterwards.
So what's going to happen for the 2 months?
Oh, Leslie Marshall will take over my hour for those 2 months.
I'll figure that out. Okay.
No, she's going to take take over. You won't be. You're not going to hear blank airspace. I assure you. No, she's going to fill in for me for those 2 months. Yeah. No, don't worry.
Okay.
You won't.
I'm sure that. You are well educated, and I don't want to. Actually, people call me an intellectual snob, and so I don't want to call you that because I don't think I am one. But anyhow, if you read Plato's Republic, which I'm sure you have, like
the man in the cave,
you want the person. Pardon?
Go ahead. Sorry.
You want the philosopher in the cave who
right.
doesn't want an office to be put in office, like forced to be.
Right. I said the man in the cave. Well, that's kind of how I feel I am. And the nice thing is that it's interesting. Most politicians sort of don't give you the inside scoop. And what I plan to do really is let you know what it's like. I'm trying to let you know what it's like when I run for office. And if, more questions, if we run out of time today, we go tomorrow. And I'm trying to give you an idea what it's like to serve and really let you know. and answer your tough questions. I like tough questions. I'm not like the Republicans on CNBC. Don't ask me tough questions. I like tough questions, moral questions, philosophical questions. What do you do, you know, when a lobbyist gives you a check and you don't support their cause? I mean, I want to deal with these things straight on, not hide it, not run from it. You know, I'm a talk show host. I'm that's what I am. And so for me, hiding from these questions is exactly the wrong thing to do. So I hope I am like that philosopher in a cave and can come out and see with the one eye, you know, in a land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. And I think I'm going to go in and with one eye and come back and let y'all know what's going on.
Well, you know what media stands for? I mean, D-I-A.
D-I-A? D-I-A?
Yeah, media.
It's the multiple of mediums.
Make everybody dumb in America.
Okay.
So we need good media people, you know.
Fair enough. And the point of progressive media is to make everybody smart in America. So that's what I'm going to keep doing.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in, Helen. I want to get to my other two callers. But listen, I got more time tomorrow. Call in, then we can chat further. Just general rule, call in earlier in the show. You'll get more time on the air. Thanks for your call, Helen. Let's go to William in Santa Fe, line two. Hey, William, how are you?
Well, congratulations, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm here in Santa Fe. Almost 37 years ago, I was at the College of Santa Fe in political science, and our professor said, if you want 10 extra points, go to your ward meetings, either Democratic or Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Democratic because my parents were Democrats, and I've been going ever since.
Good for
and,
you. I give you 100
I
points.
Recently,
anyone who calls in and is active in their local Democratic committee, you know what, or even local Republican committee, if you are active in your local political committee, I'll give you preference on the air because you are grassroots. You are what makes America work. People who don't vote annoy me the most because they're not taking part in their society, their democracy. People who go to local Democratic committee or Republican committee meetings and sit through all of that long rhetoric and work hard to get people elected, you, my friends, you're voters to the third power. You are you're the opposite of those that are apathetic, and I salute you. The Alexandria Democratic Committee, the Arlington Democratic Committee, the Fairfax Democratic Committee did a fantastic job last night. I saw their work firsthand. I've been a member of the Alexandria Democratic Committee for many years, and I salute anyone who works in local ward politics. So good for you.
Well, thank you, Mark. And I worked for a state representative here, which is similar to your delegate in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's been reelected 5 times,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I was his campaign manager, and, you know, the first time we had a hell of a time raising money.
Right.
And then once he was
once you
elected,
win, the money comes easy.
Money.
I know.
Yeah.
That's where I am. It's exactly where I am, and it poses some real ethical questions for me, honestly. But I'll discuss them openly with you folks on the air. In fact, that's one of the things I want to talk about tomorrow is money in politics. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what he does with the money is we do a thing called the Breakfast Club, and we invite people from the community in to a restaurant, and we buy them breakfast, and we kind of close off the area, and then we talk about issues, whether it be health care or small business, how to help small business.
I mean, William, that's great, but I would never charge at my breakfast club. All right, I have fundraisers, and I love fundraisers. Oh, you buy them breakfast, but is there a charge? Do they have to pay to go?
Breakfast, and it gets the word out, you know, about various issues.
Oh, okay. I just want to make sure you didn't charge people to come to. I'm actually having a town hall meeting in my hometown of Alexandria 2 weeks from yesterday, so I can talk to the public and hear what they have to say. We're running out of time, William. I guess that's it. And Paul, I didn't get to you. Tell you what, folks, if I missed your call today or I didn't get a chance to finish, call in tomorrow. I want to talk in detail about money in politics, maybe some solutions to get money out of politics, because I've dealt with it and it's probably the least fun part of politics. This is Mark Levine. Talk to you tomorrow.